Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So evidently, Kevin thinks I'm going to burn in, well, the Southern Hemisphere for my comment about this Ghislaine Maxwell and hoping that really, really horrible things happen to her. And I do. I really hope. And I know it's a mark on my soul. It's a permanent mark on my record for when I go to the pearly gates. But I don't care. I hope they do horrible, terrible things to her. Just my thought. And I guess it's where I'm going to be. Good news, I guess some sanity from Texas. Greg Abbott, as I said earlier, $250 fine for anyone caught without a mask in a public place. Here to share some thoughts on if that's reality or not, I've asked our good friend Propane Jane, renowned psychiatrist and also one of my favorite Twitter commentators. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So am I getting this right? $250 fine in Texas?
Yeah, I mean, but again, shut the state down. Shut the state down. I mean, yes, the mask, that's one thing, but that's not stopping people from still, you know, going to work and going to all of these places that they don't necessarily need to be. And we in Texas were actually doing pretty well when we had a functioning stay-at-home order, and our numbers were nowhere near this bad. So it just seems like common sense to go all the way. Don't just do these half measures with the mask. Actually, you know, put the full teeth to it, put the full pedal to the metal, and shut everything down until we have control of this.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, I still think this is an amazing step for him. I'm, you know, there's part of me that goes, I didn't think he was capable of learning. Even this, I mean, as minor as this is, I wow.
Well, you know what? This is Greg. This is Greg, and this is the Texas GOP. And if you pay attention to them long enough, you will see them backtrack so many times and flip-flop so many times. I mean, they literally should get some type of award for the gymnastics that they're capable of doing.
Okay, well, good. Well, it's something anyway. I'm sure,
yeah,
I'm waiting.
I mean,
for...
he admitted to making a mistake. I mean,
wow.
He admitted to having some regret. This is another thing that he's done. This is why I'm saying this about him, is that, you know, when he came out and actually shut the bars back down and made the order to shut down the dining capacity for restaurants, he actually said, oh, maybe that wasn't necessarily the best idea to open the bars back up. Well, again, it's too late for him to say that. I mean, thanks for telling us that. But again, what else are you having regrets and second thoughts about? And can you just go ahead and redo what you did before that was working? Because clearly you have the insight and the judgment to know that you've made some egregious mistakes along the way.
No, it's a good point. But, you know, I had a Republican listener tell me that, you know, the Republicans don't believe in government mandates and government making us do things. They believe that people are smart enough to make the right choices. I'm sorry. He believes that they're smart enough to do the right
thing.
And I'm going, you know, the sad reality of our situation, Jane, is that we're dependent for our survival on the weakest links. All those people who show up to these bars, the people who send out, you know, party invitations saying absolutely no masks and many people in a swimming pool as possible.
Right.
Those are the weakest links. That's why we're screwed.
Yeah, and we're screwed not just because of those weakest links as civilians, but we're screwed because they are getting these directives and this whole entire belief system from the government. They're getting it from the highest levels of our federal government that you don't need to take any of this seriously, all the way down to Trump himself refusing to wear a mask. So they can say whatever policy or, you know, act like they want to do something different, but until they demonstrate the behaviors themselves, that's how human behavior works. If somebody you idolize and you see as an example is not doing the public health guidelines, then you're going to totally dismiss them and not take them seriously. If your leaders are rushing to reopen your state, and your executives at your job are rushing to send you back to work and threatening to fire you if you won't come into work, then the human behavior at the lowest levels of society, where we don't have any power to change the guidelines or change the policy of our company or our government, then our human behavior, we don't even have the ability to make all of these decisions for ourselves if our actual basic livelihood, if our job, if our, you know, roof over our head, food on our table, depends on us still going to a job that requires us to be there because it doesn't have any funding from the government to pay people while they're furloughed or while they're, you know, on unemployment, et cetera. We're not paying people enough to sustain themselves.
Right.
You know, and the other countries that have successfully gotten themselves out of the woods have done that because at a policy level, at a government level, they decided to do economic stimulus. They decided to take away that impetus amongst people, amongst business owners who are going to think about that profit motive above all else because they're safe, right? They don't have to go and make these sacrifices with their life every day. And because the government has not given them the ability to, you know, not worry about money, they're worried about money. I mean, this is capitalism. This is what happens, unfortunately.
It's crazy. But again, there are people who are going to die and suffer because of all of the failures of leadership from the top all the way down.
Yeah.
And again, it comes from our Lone Ranger.
Absolutely. That's exactly who it comes from. And again, you know, yes, you can cut out a certain degree of movement of the public by saying, okay, we're shutting down the beaches or we're shutting down the parks for a big holiday weekend. But again, if you're still, you know, if you're shutting down the bars but then still leaving restaurants open and just saying, well, you can only operate at 50% capacity, well, you're still exposing people. You're still exposing people to the virus that's still around. And again, if they're going into their workplace, that virus is still around there. We don't have a vaccine yet. None of the scientific indicators that we need to be there indicate that regular people should be doing as much movement as they are doing in our society across the board. It's not just Texas. It's coming across the entire country.
Yep.
Because it's a ripple effect. We're not just in a vacuum in our own individual states. People are still traveling to other states. People are still planning trips and vacations. I mean, I hear people say, oh, I'm going to so-and-so. And I'm like, they still have coronavirus there.
Yeah. And well, Martha McSally wants the TRIP Act. She wants to give every person $4,000 to go on vacation.
Yeah. And again, we're talking about a subset of the population who still has the disposable income despite a pandemic, despite a recession, to be taking these lavish vacations that they're going to get a tax write-off for. You know, I mean, when again, we're talking about families that are literally having to depend on their independent school district to help feed their kids over the summer. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just not reality for them to be thinking of these very Republican-centric, 1%-centric type remedies.
Yep.
That aren't going to actually positively impact 99% of the population that's struggling in the face of this situation.
No, and as I pointed out, even if you got the $4,000, what happens if you don't have a job that has any vacation time?
Exactly.
You don't even get to use it. So you got screwed. And this was for people who were going to Disneyland anyway.
Exactly. Exactly.
This was just another one of those Republican legislative fixes to put more money in the pockets of their friends and their donors. It's that simple. I want to change topics real quick. Done with virus for now. This Amy Cooper woman. Evidently,
yes.
I'm sure you saw the video. The black guy watching the birds.
Yeah.
She calls the police. She flips out. She's actually going to be charged with something.
Yeah, she should be.
She should be. All of these people who keep calling the police on people.
Yeah.
We should be charging them with
system.
Something.
Yeah. I definitely agree with you. I think they're abusing the 911 system. I mean, again, I'm saying this as a physician. Like, I'm not even just talking about it from a Black Lives Matter perspective. Because certainly that's the important perspective here that we're talking about with Amy Cooper, is that she literally attempted to stick law enforcement on a black man. And people do this all the time. I mean, it's as old as the police in America, this phenomenon. But I think beyond that, particularly as we're talking about a pandemic, not to bring back the virus again, but anytime you are misusing the 911 system, you are taking those resources away from people who are literally in clinical emergencies or actual situations that are unsafe that need law enforcement intervention.
Right. But the reason I bring it up is, you know, I went back, I watched the video a couple of times, and this woman's clearly suffering from something.
Yeah.
You know, so could that be considered a mental health problem that she has?
No. No. I mean, what she's suffering from is racism and white woman privilege.
Okay.
I mean, that's not something that you can claim as a mental illness. I mean, I'm sure there are people that probably want to be able to claim it because they think somehow that's going to get them out of consequences. But I can guarantee you, even on a psychiatry unit, if a patient is on that unit yelling out racial epithets and making racist comments to people on the staff or other patients, that can be grounds for taking that patient off of the unit and transferring them to somewhere else. So the idea that somehow that's an acceptable behavior or part of a criteria that goes with major depression or anxiety disorder or even bipolar or schizophrenia or some psychotic disorder, it's not.
Okay.
It's because just not.
There just seem to be a lot of these women who are really, and I shouldn't just say women, but I've seen a lot of women lately.
Yeah.
And I'd always thought
it's
that,
the
you know,
Karens.
Yeah, I'd always thought that, you know, that maybe when women rule the world, that things will be a little better. I'm no longer thinking that way anymore.
Well, it's not these women in particular, no. And again, that's why there's a whole Karen phenomenon and why there's, like, whole Twitter accounts, like, you know, Karen's gone wild.
Did you see QAnon
actually,
Karen?
That's the one I follow on Instagram. It's called Karen's Gone Wild.
Did you see QAnon Karen? With the $40,000 Rolex flipping out at Target? If you've got a $40,000 Rolex, what the hell are you doing at Target?
Target's got some great deals, no matter how much money you have.
Okay.
But I mean, I think the larger issue is that, you know, we talk about this with Trump as well, that, yes, I mean, this is a man who has a personality disorder, but he also just so happens to be a racist at the same time.
Right.
And so, yes, it can be possible that someone can be personality disordered and be a jerk and be very arrogant clinically, like to the point where it impairs their functioning in society. It impairs their ability to keep and hold down a job because they're being an arrogant jerk at work or they're being a hateful bigot at work. That can get them fired. Granted, they're not going to, the reason isn't going to be because X, Y, and Z has a personality disorder. It will be attached to the behaviors that they did.
Right.
But ultimately, yes, that person has a problem with interpersonal relationships, whether it be personal or, you know, at work. But again, you know, that's not disqualifying for a lot of jobs. As we see every day, Trump being a blatant, avowed racist and white supremacist who literally will stand there and defend monuments to slavery, monuments to the Confederacy, Nazis as very fine people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This man can still keep that job even though he's that way.
Right. Now, did you, I know you didn't, but I got to ask the question anyway. Did you watch any of the speech from Mount Rushmore?
Well, I've seen the clips. He looks awful. His face was like not even a human color, clearly. It didn't match his neck. I mean, that's the thing that I don't pay attention to anything he actually says. I just do a mental status exam on how he looks and how he sounds. And he sounds totally incoherent.
Yeah, I mean, he's, I mean, he, and you know, look, I, he doesn't have anything left. I mean, there's nothing else to run on. You got to run on defending the Confederacy. You got to run on, this culture war idea. And, you know, I had predicted it, a while ago that this is where he's going to go because it's all that's left.
Yeah.
Does it fly? I mean, because, I've had a bunch of people, again, we've had this conversation of, how much history do we have to, rewrite or how much do we have to deal with this stuff? And I'm going, I don't know where it ends. But I know this isn't the right move.
Right. And again, I think that for those of us who are watching it as, marginalized people who belong to the groups that he's pervasively picking on and attacking and oppressing through policy, when he says these things, when he does these things, when he orchestrates, again, I don't think that he is a very intelligent man. I don't think that he is a well-learned man or someone who fully understands history. I do think that his handlers, the people who are around him, Stephen Miller, Bannon, even Putin to some degree, are certainly, I think, helping him in terms of getting all of these quote-unquote dog whistles and the timeline and the places and the days exactly on purpose to offend the groups that they've decided he needs to offend in order to keep this certain segment of the GOP base, the white voting majority, in his corner. I mean, it's not a coincidence that he tried to go to Tulsa on Juneteenth. There certainly was a backlash because it was so obvious, the connection.
Right.
And then he changed the date. But, I mean, clearly by that point it was already obvious of what he was attempting to do. And then now you go to Mount Rushmore, where this is already a disputed land, okay? And then naturally you invite the protests from the indigenous people who have a claim to that land, who have been pissed off about that land being taken for the purpose of Mount Rushmore this entire time. And it's not like Trump, the people around him, his administration, this cabal, it's not like they don't know that. They know where the open wounds are, and they're on purpose pouring salt in them.
Or they're just fighting political correctness.
Well, but again, fighting political correctness, quote unquote, and this whole mission to do that and to, piss on all these groups while they're doing that, is, again, a concerted white supremacist effort on the part of Trump and, by association, guilt by association, the Republican Party, for going along with it and using him as a means to stay politically relevant and maintain power, because they know that's the purpose that he's serving and that's how they're getting the votes that they're still managing to hang on to. So they're complicit in all of it, even though they're not, saying exactly what he's saying, and they're backing away from it anonymously, et cetera.
Right.
They still want this to happen because they know it's the only way they can stay in power.
No, I mean, it's just one of those things that just makes you go, this is who the Republican Party's always been.
Yeah.
So it's not surprising to me. So,
right.
But will things change now that Kanye West has announced that he's running for president? Maybe when Donald steps aside, Kanye will be who they put in place?
Well, Kanye is also dealing with a mental health issue.
No.
I mean, that's the first piece of it. And I'm not even saying that to be funny. I mean, that is a legitimate part of his story. And so I think any legitimization of him doing this is also getting into that same cycle that we're talking about with Trump, where this is a person who's not well and actually has a documented mental illness, unlike Trump, where he actually has been formally diagnosed. He has had to go to treatment very publicly. He has had to be placed on medication and has very publicly decided that he is not going to take that medication. So to even take it seriously that this man, I don't even understand why Joel Osteen feels like he has the credibility to bring him in front of his congregation even. But again, that's church, that's another thing. But to act like this man is appropriate for the political realm when he hasn't even actually done the paperwork to actually really run and be on the ballot, and it's clear that this is a publicity stunt.
Got a new album out.
Exactly. I mean, I just think that, again, this is more of the media insulting our intelligence as the American people, that we are continually being inundated with these very unserious people and being told that this is who our leaders should be. I mean, this is unacceptable, I think, just as a society, for us to still be going down this path literally while we're in the middle of a disaster brought to us by, you know, Celebrity Apprentice and reality TV.
No,
as
excellent
whole
point.
Concept.
Excellent point. Now, I'm getting ready to see the push for gun control legislation anytime now. I don't know if you saw this over the weekend. I'm pretty sure you did.
Yes, I did.
But there was a black militia group, reportedly heavily armed, is what Reuters said, as they marched through Stone Mountain Park near Atlanta, which I believe what I'm told is this is where the white supremacists and the Klan go to have their little orgies or whatever it is they do.
Right.
thoughts?
Yeah, I was proud of them, actually. I mean, I know that is like, you know, maybe a questionable thing to hear coming from me, because it is a radical thing and it is very anarchist and intimidating. I mean, it's a very insurrectionist type thing. But again, you know, me and you have had this conversation many times before, and again, it's the hypocrisy of the Second Amendment, and the fact that, yes, like you said, when the Black Panthers did this, that's, you know, really one of the only times that we've had successful gun control in this country, minus Bill Clinton, you know, and the crime bill, the assault weapons ban of the 1994 crime bill, that really was not just done in response to gang violence and all of the guns that were on the street in relation to the crack cocaine epidemic and the gang violence, et cetera, but also the white supremacist extremist violence, Ruby Ridge, Waco, all of these very, you know, prominent attacks that happen, and where law enforcement, American law enforcement, sustained casualties.
Right.
That was what prompted those gun reforms, and actually a point where we didn't have all of these mass shootings.
Yep. No, and don't forget John Hinckley Jr. and who shot Reagan. That was Brady was part of it.
Exactly.
And the bank robbery in L.A. that, you know, people forget about.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, but again, this is a different moment in time, and I think that's why they purposefully did that march, because ultimately what they said in the video was, hey, we keep hearing that the white supremacists are going to go out on July 4th and purposely just start indiscriminately killing black people. And their point is a very important and salient point, which is we have never just been this sitting duck, docile population that isn't armed. You know, I'm saying this as a black Texan. I mean, we carry by virtue of just basic survival since Reconstruction. I mean, how else do people think that black people were able to survive Reconstruction, Jim Crow, up until this point in the South? After the Union left, after the war, who else do you think was here to defend us?
Yeah.
And so that was essentially their point, to say you can't just make these threats and not expect there to be a counter threat. You can't just say you have Second Amendment rights as a white man to open carry in this state and act like we don't have those same rights. We get that when we do it, it scares the living daylights out of you.
No, I'll tell you, it doesn't matter who it is. When I see a whole bunch of people lined up,
of course,
walking
terrifying
down the street with guns, I start to worry, because that's not good.
It's terrifying, exactly. And I think what's even more terrifying about this moment, and again, the point that those men and women were making, is that the reason why in this moment they could have such a huge show of force with those weapons, and it wasn't even just the weapons, because they were more sophisticated looking than these random white guys that do open carry. They were all dressed in black. They were all in line. They were marching in unison. They actually looked like a well-regulated militia. And they actually looked like somebody that if they were actually attacked, they would go back and they would actually put a very, you know, formidable attack back.
Right.
And so the fact that the powers that be aren't looking at that and going, okay, wait a minute, we do have a brewing recipe for this race war that everybody's talking about. We do have heavily armed people on both sides, and we have these gun laws that give them the right to do that, and we have all these mass shootings, and we're not stopping it. So the fact that the powers that be aren't doing anything, again, raises that question of, is this what you want?
Yeah. No, this is what the reason I brought it up. I'm going, you know, when I saw this, I'm going, this is going to freak a lot of people out that maybe weren't freaked out by the rally they had in Virginia where, you know, a whole bunch of people showed up of what I said wasn't a rally or lobby day, but just a show of force
right.
And a show of, hey, look what we've got. And I saw this and I'm going, you know, hey, this is the same kind of message. And do we want this kind of thing to continue where it's
right.
going to get bigger and bigger and bigger till eventually we're going to choose up sides and start throwing things at each other?
Yeah. I mean, that's essentially where we're at. Because, again, you know, as we've talked about in the gun debate, I mean, yes, there are heavily armed people on both sides. But when we come down to the politics of it and we come down to who is voting for gun reform and who's voting against gun reform, it's the NRA. It's the white guys that are heavily armed, particularly in the South, but, you know, as we've seen, it's all over the country now, who are going into the booth and voting Republican because they know that the Republicans are going to uphold this billion-dollar gun industry and are going to not put any restrictions on how many weapons you can have, whether or not you can have an assault weapon, whether or not you can have these high-capacity magazines, et cetera, whether or not you can have a weapon if you're a felon or you have a domestic violence history. They're doing everything to make it easier for people to get guns, not just because of the profit motive, but also because they have this rabid base of people that feels like they need to protect themselves from hordes of people of color.
Yeah, so that was the last thing I wanted to ask on this. You know, is this not going to be a sales tool for the gun industry? You say, look, they're amassing.
Of course it is.
Look at them. Be afraid.
Of course it is. It already is. I mean, again, my husband is a major gun enthusiast. He watches all the gun channels. He goes to the courses. He has all the targets. He has all the stuff, okay? On these programs, they use targets that look like black people. They use the mugshots. The cops have been caught. I mean, there have been recent stories of the cops usually literally using mugshots of black men in their target practice. So that's already what's driving this industry. They have already been coached on how to say, I feared for my life, not just as police, but also as civilians, as
right.
vigilantes. So open carry, stand your ground. These are things that they have already been taught through their gun affiliations and their concealed carry licenses. So they already know what to say. And that's what the black people were saying that are doing these, you know, shows of force with their weapons is, hey, we're taking the classes too.
Right. No,
we
I
were
mean,
in the military too. We know tactical weapons. We know how to use them. And we have them too. So don't ever think that, you know, your reaction isn't going to be opposed by an equal and opposite reaction, Newton's law. So, again, I just think that if we don't actually solve the underlying issues, which are, again, the systemic institutionalized oppression of marginalized people, whether they're, you know, women, LGBTQ, whether they're people of color, whether they're immigrants, et cetera, there's still this emotional, you know, baggage there that is the fuel for these conflicts. It just is. And right now, our whole leaning as a country is leaning towards giving power to the white supremacists. The white supremacists are in power. So, of course, in that situation, marginalized people, whether they're armed or not, whether they're peacefully protesting or not, are fighting back against that. It just is what it is. Until we get the source of division out of our government, this is what's going to be the situation.
Not a good future.
I know. It's bad. I mean, it really is. That's why we have to vote differently. That's why we have to take this seriously now and actually act in the interest of not just our best safety, you know, public health-wise, because of a virus, but also because of this risk of violence and war and all these conflicts across the board.
That and the fact that, you know, the Russians are probably stoking a lot of this. I mean, here locally, we're about 45 minutes from Gettysburg. And over the weekend, there were a whole bunch of knotheads with their Confederate flags because, you know, someone on Facebook said that there was going to be a flag burning where they were going to hand out little flags for those libtards, little kids to burn.
Right.
And a whole bunch of crazy people showed up and there was nobody there.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, it's this kind of, you know, the Russians have, you know, they've got to be thrilled that this is going to be a field day for them.
Oh, yeah, they're very happy with this.
It's crazy, crazy stuff. Last thing I got for you.
Yeah.
Mary Trump, the new book, I guess, that's still being held out. She claims that Trump has basically, he's cheating as a way of life. Is that a revelation? Is that worth buying the damn book over?
No, it's not. But the only reason why it may be is because she is so close to him and she knows so many things about him that he does not want known, that whatever it is she plans to tell is going to be a gigantic narcissistic injury and fall from grace for him. In his own mind, even though we may already know he's the scum of the earth,
right,
he doesn't want certain people who may not fully know that yet to know certain information, and that's why she's doing this.
There you go.
Yeah.
He may not know he's the scum of the earth yet, and he doesn't want to be told. There you go. I got it. Perfect. As always, Jane, I appreciate the time. Good stuff. Thank you.
You too. Have a great week and be safe.
You as well, our good friend Propane Jane. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.